I loved the hymn singing this morning. I am bringing a bit of another tradition from my Southern evangelical background at home, where I think we, just as important as sermonizing, is this concept of testifying. So maybe this is a little less of a sermon than a testimony, if you're familiar with that sort of lingo. But before I testify, I need to confess something. Actually, I want to start out my confession with saying that I really love Tom Bull, and I think he does an incredible job at working on all our media and communications, and I really appreciate all of his work. But it was my second or third day of work here, and Tom said, "I need a picture of you to put in the newsletter this month when we introduce you in the Chimes." And I said, okay, even though it was like the afternoon and I was a little overwhelmed with my new job and we're under these fluorescent lights, but I was like, I don't want Tom to think I'm vain. I don't know him very well. I want to impress him with my maturity and not my vanity. So Tom takes this picture of me and he shows it to me and I said, oh, that's great, even though I didn't like it at all. I wanted to say, my eyes are a little droopy and my hair is not fixed, but I was trying to be an adult about this. And so then the picture's there in the Chimes, and I'm like, oh, okay. But then the same picture starts popping up everywhere. This picture has been in the gathering room this whole year. And then it's in the Chimes again every single time I'm mentioned, it seems like. And it's everywhere I go. And just this last week, Tom puts it on Facebook. And it's so great of him to think that I'm pretty enough to represent our church, but in my mind, this is not me. But that's my problem, not Tom's, just to be clear. I didn't just bring this picture up here to complain about it. As I look back on this year, and all kinds of people everywhere asking me, you know, what have you learned this year? What's different about you this year, and what are you taking forward from this year? I look back at this girl from early September. She doesn't know the meaning of the word snow, and I wonder what I would say to her if I could go back and talk to her. I think I would tell her that she needs to knit a couple more hats to wear. She's going to lose them all. I'd tell her to go to the farmer's market a lot more, because that's a great place. And I would tell her that she should stop worrying and just enjoy her life. And Nate Medford is more than just the only eligible straight guy around. And I would absolutely tell her that more than that, she should stop worrying in general, because I'm a very happy person. I would tell her all about how great the summer has been and how much I like living life and have come to love Syracuse and University Church. But it would also be easy to go through the year and point out all the places where she was going to have her heart broken, because there would be a lot of them. I could tell her not to hold events for Copper Beach Commons students if she didn't want to feel like a fool for hoping they would come. I could tell her on the night her purse was going to be stolen out of a Catholic Charities van on Tip Hill, she should at least leave her library card at home. I could tell her not to go to work on the day a food pantry client would call her a demon. I would tell her to be prepared for someone to steal another volunteer's cane, for anger and hopelessness to overwhelm her some days when poverty seemed too big and complex and horrible for anyone to escape. And of course, I could tell her not to get her hopes up about community. I could tell her to stop trying to earn her housemate's love and respect and trust. I'd tell her that all the extra chores done and attempts to pray together, all the trying for patience and the search for recipes to please everyone, the repentance over failures to clean and the conflict training would all be futile, or they would seem so in the end. tell her she shouldn't try, that believing in love, despite differences, would turn out to be silly. I might show her this blog post from February. It feels fair to describe last week as traumatic. A scant 2 weeks ago, I lost a housemate to something, I may never know what, to something called sadness and probably my own failures and those of many other people. Intentional community of three suddenly downgraded to housemate-dom or friendship or whatever other words describe a dyad. 3 days later, I lost my other housemate, my house, and a lot of trust to all of the same mistakes, piling up like the snow outside and breaking everything at once, after 6 months of trying and hoping and striving to hold it all together on the part of a great many people. The program is ending, your housemate is leaving. I had weathered a lot of dysfunction, disappointment, and pain on stubborn hope and the sense that everyone was still trying, but here we all suddenly stood, defeated. How dysfunctional is too dysfunctional? Was our little family doomed to disintegration from the beginning? Maybe there will be answers eventually, but there is this to be said for living together in intentional community. Like your real siblings, you share more experience with your housemates than you can really explain to anyone else. There are too many factors and too many complications, too many little moments to really explain. So what does it mean to be the last one holding on to a commitment, like someone forgot to tell you recess was over and you're holding on to one end of a jump rope alone? Was it foolish after all to care and reach out and pray so much for people who seemed distant and unreachable? Or was it foolish not to care and search for patience and pray even more? I already felt fragile, brittle in the bitter February cold. And now these relationships were abruptly terminated or redefined beyond recognition. Nothing about the year made sense. It was Ash Wednesday, and I had never felt so deeply that humans are all of us, all dust. It would be easy to look at this girl and try to spare her of these experiences. And this is important to me. This is not really just a hypothetical exercise, because in many ways, I am that girl again. I have committed once again to the exhausting project of starting over with a new city and a new community, and I have to wonder if it's foolish or even irresponsible not to protect myself just a little more. A few weeks later, I wrote, "Not long before this year, I was an extremely private person. I did not speak my mind or say my feelings or share my stories. I didn't share with people and let them carry around those little bits of me, out of mind-numbing fear. People would hurt me, people would not listen to me, people would look at my gift and not think that I was worth giving back to. Overcoming that fear, bit by bit, has been exhilarating, but now my fears have been realized in a really big way for the first time. The temptation has never been stronger to rebuild those walls and go back into my efficient, comfortable shell of self-sufficiency and a blank face, because that place feels like a haven. To be honest, it is all I can do at times to stay in one place, feeling all the fullness of being hurt in a place of raw, tender new growth without fleeing." So what is the point of all that? Why risk it again? Why does Jesus send out his own disciples like lambs among wolves? Here's the end of that post. "I made the decision around this time last year to get rid of those walls out of a sense that I couldn't wait any longer, that I would die somehow if I didn't stop cowering away from vulnerability, and that my Bible was pursuing me from every corner with one message, tell the truth. Now I'm just obeying, and it's more quiet and pedestrian, and I'm at a point, though, where continuing is costly. I don't stare down fear as much as I have to face the pain itself that I used to be afraid of. But I trust that there is a new and more beautiful strength in this quiet but open, surrendered, unafraid fragility. If I could go back and talk to the girl in this picture, that is what I would tell her. I would tell her that she would be hurt this year and that she would spend months in that place of fragility. But I would tell her that she would yet survive, that there is a new and more beautiful strength in that place. Because God is with us there. God is with us when we are most brittle, when we are most bruised. God provides the space to rest and heal and sends us on to the next place of ministry. Jesus sends his disciples with companions on their way, and in that regard, I would tell this girl not to take University Church for granted. This place is one of so many ways that God has provided for me this year, but probably the biggest. I am so thankful that we found each other long before we ever knew that I would need your support so much. In big ways and small, this community held me up when I was struggling to stand. I cannot thank you enough. So, I would not tell this girl to avoid the hard things. I would not tell her that life is better lived on surfaces, in safe places, or without need for others to sometimes hold out a lifeline so you can take a few ragged breaths. I'd tell her that her hunch is right. It is a deeper and richer life that is given away, all of it, all of yourself. And I'd tell her that she will only know how true this really is after she's lived some of the pain that that entails. I am emerging from this year more fully myself, with a heart broken and healed, and a little better able to rest in the love of God. Vulnerability is only possible, and I am only strong because he is my hiding place. Run back to him, little girl. If I could say only 4 words to her, they would be, run back to him. May we all find the faith to retain hope for this broken world, and the courage to open ourselves to others, and the deep, unshakable strength that does exist on the other side of healing. May we lift one voice to say together, you turned my wailing into dancing. You removed my sackcloth and clothed me with joy, that my heart may sing your praises and not be silent. Lord my God, I will praise you forever. Amen.